Good afternoon, and welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
And I'll just give you 5 seconds to just, you know, gather your thoughts. Who's our sponsor today, Bill?
Our sponsor today is Pape Machinery.
Yes, that's
yes.
it.
Yes, Pape Machinery. They're at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, and they handle everything John Deere. Go by and see them. They have tractors, mowers, box scrapers, you name it. And just in time for Christmas, go by and see them. They also stock Honda generators and steel products.
Nice.
So if you want chainsaws, weed whackers, they've got it all in stock. Their phone number is 226-9226, or you can get them on the web at papemachinery.com.
And there you have it.
There you go.
Well, so this is the second hour, so if you missed the first hour, you're going to have to go back and listen to it, because there was a ton of information. This is December 6th, 2020. Our guest is Peter Friedman, and you're inspiring people out there, Mr. Friedman. They're getting in the Christmas spirit, and they're thinking about safety. So I had somebody who texted me and said that what you do is you wrap empty boxes under your Christmas tree just as a measure of, you know, not having criminals come in and steal all your stuff. You put empty boxes under there, and it has the added benefit that if your kids are smarting off and you have a fireplace, you just start throwing the presents into the fireplace.
Ah, yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, so anyway, it's a little child control and criminal buster there. People are locked in their houses. I think they're all losing it. Oh, dear.
Yeah.
You can put that on your website
yeah,
if you like. You can steal that from Dave.
Need to start getting out more, because there's something wrong with that.
That's some fun stuff right there.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've gone through the safe room, and really for the folks that are listening, if you haven't gone to look at these PDFs that he has posted, or to his website at friedmanhandguntraining.com, you're blowing it, because there's a ton of information, and I guarantee you have not already thought of all this stuff.
No. And the story you were telling about the 21-foot man with a knife, we've done that exercise, and you are absolutely right. You cannot defend yourself with a handgun in a holster from a guy with a knife within 21 feet. You're going to get stuck. You can't get your hand around that gun and up and fire before he can have you.
Yeah, 21 feet's not very far.
It sounds like it'd be a piece of cake.
But then also think about who we're dealing with these days. You know, most of these people are on some weird kind of drugs. They're like 15 times faster than we are. You ever watch them do stuff? Or leap in front of your car in 3 seconds.
Oh,
sorry, Bill.
Oh,
didn't mean to bring that up again.
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that.
Yeah, Bill hit a tweaker.
Yeah, I do.
Bill hit a tweaker. He leapt off the curb and boom, there you
have
it.
I got a notch on my steering wheel.
He broke the bug shield.
Yeah.
I think that went down as hail damage, but anyway, we
Hail Mary damage.
Oh, God, what is this? Is like true confession. Hurry, Mr. Friedman, save us.
Okay, I got two funny stories for you.
Oh, good. We love funny
along
stories.
The same line. Put a little humor in here. The first one is I generally will tell women who live alone who don't have a dog, I go get a dog bowl and get some wet dog food and smear it on the sides of the bowl and put it outside the front door. And it just sits there. Then take your cell phone and find an app for dogs barking. Get the loudest dog barking and the meanest dog barking that you can find. Download it into your cell phone. And now somebody comes to the front door and you don't want them there and they won't go away. And they see the dog bowl sitting there. And we've got this from actual inmates. That's where we develop all of this good stuff.
Oh.
And if they won't go away, then you hit the button on your phone with the dog barking, and you holler very loudly by the front door, "Killer, I'll feed you. I got to get rid of this guy in the front porch first. Don't worry about it. Killer, I'll feed you."
And don't
go away.
And don't use a little bitty dog bowl. Use a big one.
Oh, no. No, big dog bowl and some dead food in it, and believe me, that definitely will do the trick.
Oh, my God.
Okay, so as a word of caution, when you dial 911 and you think you're having a home invasion, your biggest goal during that event is don't get shot by the police.
Mm.
And by that I mean once you tell a 911 dispatcher where you are in the home, you cannot leave that location. So, guys, regardless of whether or not it's really quiet and the wife or the girlfriend says, why don't you go out and see what's going on, take the gun and walk out, and now you're in the dark, and we get inside the house, and what do we see? We see a figure in the dark moving around with a gun in her hand.
Yeah, not good.
Yeah, you're not. Don't do it. Don't do it. So the minute you call 911, you have to stay where you told 911 you are, whether that's in your safe room or a closet or somewhere else. You've got to stay there until the police arrive and we clear the house. It's that simple. Okay, so let's get involved in some California law. If you go to Penal Code 25400, Penal Code 25400, it talks about concealed firearms. Okay, it says that they have to be in a locked container unless you have a carry permit. So they have to be in a locked container. It does not say what the material should be for the container. So in other words, you can carry a firearm legally unloaded in a soft side bag as long as you can lock it. So what you do is you take the two zippers on either side, you pull them up together, and they have little holes in there, and you can put that little luggage lock through there. Never, and I stress never, limit your access to a firearm by a key or any kind of a lockbox that uses batteries, because trying to find the key and manipulate the key in the lock is what is called a fine motor skill. Okay? If you have a three-digit lock, a combination lock like the TSA recommends, you put your three-digit code in there, and all you do is you move the furthest wheel, that right-hand wheel, 0 to 9, you move the wheel one digit off your code, because at that point with the adrenaline running in your system, all you got to do is move that one wheel one digit. And that's how you're going to lock the soft side bag. You can also lock a hard container that way, too. On the other hand, I recommend that you go on Amazon and you buy a firearm lockbox. They're on sale all over Amazon now for less than $20. I just bought a bunch of them myself, as a matter of fact. It is a 20-gauge steel lockbox, metal. It's got a three-digit combination lock on there. Now, when you go back to the Penal Code 25400 says the gun unloaded must be in a locked container. Well, you can have a couple of magazines that are loaded sitting in the container with the gun, and you're perfectly legal. You can transport that gun on the seat of your car, on the floor of your car, within easy access, as long as the gun is unloaded and the box is locked. Most people don't tell you this, but if you read Penal Code 25400, carrying concealed firearms, it's all right there. If you have a car that has a lockable trunk, so we're not talking about an SUV or a truck or a minivan, it has to have a lockable trunk. The Penal Code 25400 says that lockable trunk is a locked container. So you don't even have to have the gun in a lockable container. You can just throw it in the trunk, don't put the ammo in it, and you're perfectly legal.
Hmm.
Of course, if law enforcement stops you and they want to look in their trunk, they've got to have probable cause or a warrant. Okay?
Okay.
Lockbox, $19 on Amazon.
What about the ones with the buttons?
No.
No buttons?
No. You want the simple $19 metal lockbox.
Sure.
Okay? Combination lock on there. That's gross motor skill. You don't want the other one trying to fix. You know, I had a lady back in San Bernardino who had a home break-in, and she was trying to dial 911, and the only reason that we rolled to the location was because we got a dispatch of shots being fired. Mm. No 911 call. We found this poor old lady standing there. She had the cell phone in her hand, and I said, why didn't you dial 911? She was nearly catatonic with fear.
Still trying to do it.
Still trying to do it, and couldn't do it. Could not do it. So trying to dial 911 is another fine motor skill.
Hmm.
You also have to select the correct firearm. Now, you guys are funny, meaning the ladies. You go into a shoe store, you see this cute pair of shoes. The problem is it's half size too small. The clerk doesn't have one in your size, and you buy them anyway, and you figure you'll take them to the shoe store and get them stretched.
He doesn't know me very well.
Well, there are exceptions to the rule.
My shoes are all the same. They're wood, just different colors. Shout-out to Free Enterprise here, and we'll be right back. Our guest is Peter Friedman. You're listening to We the People, and you can join us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
It was nice, the party was bumping.
Hey, yeah,
and everybody having a ball.
Ha,
until the fellas start the name calling. And the girls respond to the call. I have a poor white shout out.
Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs
What an obvious spaz.
What you gonna do when they come for you?
Okay, so people don't have good fine motor skills.
No, in the crisis you don't. You fumble around and, yeah, you don't want to have to try to load your gun. And
okay, so let's go back to the shoes. Yeah. Go back to the shoes, Mr. Friedman.
Okay. I want to get into the California law here quickly, but let me just tell you, for example, with a revolver, I've been dealing quite a bit in the last several months with women who live alone who get sold a double-action-only snub-nose revolver, either a Tora, Smith & Wesson. They're good guns, but they're not good guns for home defense for the simple reason that they are not accurate beyond about 20 feet. The problem is that you have a 10 to 12 pound trigger pull on it. There's no hammer on it, and the very simple way to disable the gun is for the bad guy just to grab the cylinder so the cylinder can't rotate. It's very simple. Never buy a revolver without a hammer. Okay?
I'll throw mine away.
Yeah, well, if you've got a hammer, you cock the hammer, and that way if somebody goes to grab for it, you pull the trigger and it's going to go bang. However, it will not do that if it's a double action only and there's no hammer. So if you're supposed to be focusing on the front sight and you've got a 10-pound pull on that trigger with your trigger finger, what do you think as you're pulling the trigger that front sight is doing? It's bobbing all over the place.
Yep.
So it's those guns are backup law enforcement guns. They belong in an ankle holster with a police officer, and that's about it. That's 20 feet, you'll hit the door. Anything beyond that is worthless. You can't go to the range with it in practice because it's not accurate. It's only got an inch and 7/8-inch long barrel, and it has a lot of recoil because of that short barrel. Okay, I want to get into California law. Let's see, hammer-fired ammunition. Let me talk about ammunition real quickly. it's not the size of the bullet that necessarily is going to neutralize the threat. It's shot placement. So if you can aim and hit the bullseye at 21 feet with a 22, that might be your gun. If you can't hit the bullseye with a 38 or a 45 or something like that, maybe that's not your gun. It's shot placement that counts. My partner at L.A. County in 1967, and you can read all about this if you go to my About page on the website, click on Michael Widgerson's name. He was Milton Berle's nephew. We both grew up together in Beverly Hills, and he was killed standing next to me at the academy on Monday afternoon, March 20th, 1967, by the firearms instructor during a training exercise who decided that he was going to make this a little more realistic. He had a little Ruger 9-shot 22. He thought he had put blanks in it. Instead, it held hollow points. And he fired two rounds at us standing next to the patrol car. One went through Mike's heart. The other one went through his appendix, and he was dead in 10 minutes.
Oh, my gosh.
A 22 hollow point from about 45 feet away.
Wow.
Here is another little tidbit of information. If you shot somebody through the heart, regardless of what the caliber was, they will still continue whatever they were doing from 14 to 18 seconds. So shooting them through the heart is not necessarily going to stop them if they're coming after you. 14 to 18 seconds. You remember the 21-foot rule?
Mm-hmm.
1.5 seconds to reach you if they're inside 21 feet. So they're still moving along there from 14 to 21 seconds. All right. Shot placement, very important. We talked about magazines, ammunition. Let me get into California law because that's really important here. And you can go on my website or you can download what's on your website. And we can get into that. Jacketed hollow points are what you want to use inside the home. If you're talking about wound ballistics, imagine that from the neck to the top of your head is electrical. From your neck to your waist is hydraulic. And from your waist to your bottom of your feet, that's mobility. So if you ever have to get into some kind of shooting event, what you want to do is you want to hit them as many times in the hydraulics to upset as many organs as you can and as quickly as you can.
That's the easy way to remember it.
Yep. The other thing is, speaking of ammunition, you never want to load your gun for home defense or concealed carry with reloads. Don't ever do it. Okay, because you don't know who reloaded those things. People go out and they buy them at gun shows, and sometimes they don't work. You want to buy factory ammunition, hopefully American-made. Don't buy ammunition where it's dumped in a box bulk. You should buy factory ammo where all of the rounds are separated from each other, either with cardboard or styrofoam, the way you get it from the manufacturer. Don't buy bulk ammunition just thrown into a box because the primers are banging into each other, the cases are banging into each other, and if you get a dented case in a semi-automatic firearm, the gun is going to jam. So don't do it. All right, so let's talk about some California law here before we run out of time. Deadly force. Deadly force should only be used as a last resort. And the last resort means that you are involved in an unavoidable situation. You're in your home. Somebody has broken into the home, okay, and now they're breaking into your safe room. You have an unavoidable situation. It's a situation that you didn't start, meaning you're not on the inside of the house. You got the bad guy on the outside standing on the porch, and you open the door a little bit, and you dare him to come in. Now you're the aggressor. And it has to be a situation that you really couldn't escape from. So unavoidable, you didn't start it, and you couldn't escape from it. Reasonable force.
Let me hold you up right there. If you are in your bedroom and somebody is coming through the door, are you supposed to exit out your back bedroom door before you confront that person or protect yourself?
Absolutely not. If they're coming through the bedroom door, you're in the bedroom, you're armed, that constitutes an imminent threat to grave bodily harm or worse.
Right. So you
take
don't have
out.
To exit. Yeah. Okay.
No, no, no. It's California, believe it or not, inside your home is a stand-the-ground state. Most people don't realize that. You're not supposed to retreat. You do not have an obligation to retreat.
Okay. And that's in your home.
Force.
Right.
Pardon?
That's in your home.
In your home. Okay, now, if we go back to the 21-foot rule, if somebody's coming after you, what you need to do is make a lateral move, break their line of sight, and possibly go for cover. You don't want to duke it out to them on the sidewalk. It's not the OK Corral.
Right.
So the smart thing for you to do is you've got to break their line of sight by moving sideways, not backing up, but moving sideways. Remember, action always beats reaction. Now, they've got to react to the move you just made, and at that point, you might be able to get the gun out of the holster if you have a carry permit, or you might be able to go and exit through somewhere and get cover. So that's just using common sense. That's
right.
Smart.
Why in okay? the... I mean, okay, I'm going to ask something dumb. I mean, I know in the movies they do everything for effect or on TV or whatever, but they're always hiding in the closet. What is the deal with the closet? Does it just make the rest of us who are watching just feel more scared or something? Nobody ever hides
yeah.
behind the bed. They all hide in the stupid closet.
Yeah, it's like having a mask.
Hiding in the closet is very much like having a mask. I like it.
No, nobody will ever look in there, of course.
Right. Why would they look in the closet?
If you have small kids, I always tell them as part of your home defense plan, let the kids get under the bed, let them go in the closet, and be very quiet. And get down on the ground. You don't have to be quiet in your safe room. Okay?
Yeah.
All right. California law. What is reasonable force? California law defines reasonable force as the minimum level of force required to end a threat without going beyond that threat. So in most cases, if somebody takes a poke at you, you can't pull out a gun and shoot them. Now, it's all situational. For example, if you've got a 5-foot-tall, 85-year-old woman who happens to be carrying legally, and some guy who weighs 280 pounds and is 6'4" knocks her down to the ground, which is going on in the streets of Manhattan every day now. It's a game with these people. What can that guy do to her? He can kill her if he punches her a few times.
Oh, he'd step on her, yeah, just do major damage.
That's why it becomes situational. So if you've got two people that are equally matched, and the worst problem is that you're going to wind up with a bloody nose, you walk away. You just walk away. Okay? There is no cowardice involved in being smart. When I was in the Navy, we'd get into a bar fight somewhere back in the 60s. I'm the first guy out the door. I'm standing on the sidewalk waiting for it to all stop. I don't know. Have you ever been hit with a bar stool?
No, but I was married to someone who got hit with a beer bottle. Tell you what, cut your tear duct in half.
Same thing. You know?
Yep.
It's not smart. Just get out of the way. And let it play out. Okay? So you can't go beyond the initial force of the threat that you're dealing with. And we'll talk about that in a minute.
Okay. We will be right back. I don't know if you did that on purpose, but far be it for me not to walk through the open door. You are listening to We the People. We'll be right back with our guest, Peter Friedman, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
We
I'm excited. We can now use this song beyond the coronavirus. It'll be our self-defense song.
That's right.
Yes. So no mask, no closet.
We were talking about...
So far, we're excited about that.
Yeah, stand your ground.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hey, so what about these people we were talking when we were off the air? And Bill was saying there was an actual 911 call of a lady saying she was hiding in her closet and there was somebody in her house. And 911 said, stay in the closet. I'm hiding in the closet. There's somebody coming. And then you hear gunshots. And 911's like, are you okay? She goes, yeah, I shot him. Okay, so are they in trouble?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Okay, so just, ponying on that, always try to avoid the use of deadly force. There's a hell of a lot of paperwork involved.
Yeah. And you only want one side of the story, by the way.
Well, yeah, provided the person outside the bedroom door has reached room temperature by the time law enforcement arrives.
Yeah, that's right.
Want to make sure they're fully rehabilitated?
It's pretty obvious. Yeah. Okay, it's pretty obvious, so what has occurred. One thing that you should never do and you can't legally do is to shoot a fleeing person.
Right.
So, for example, I'll give you a scenario. Guy breaks into the house. You come out in the living room, and the guy is standing there by the front door holding a TV, and the guy drops the TV and starts to run out of your house. You can't shoot him because he's not an imminent threat personally to you. Same guy. You come out, and the guy sees you and starts running towards you with the TV. Can you shoot him?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You ever been hit with a TV?
Yeah.
Yeah. No. That TV now becomes a deadly weapon inside the house, and he's now an imminent threat. Okay?
Okay.
So we get into the issue of justifiable homicide. What is that? It's the killing of a human being in necessary self-defense or in defense of another innocent person or persons. And in order to be justified, for example, you cannot leave your front door or back door unlocked. Okay? It has to be a violent entry. There has to be some use of force, breaking and entering. An unlocked door is not considered forcible entry. So I just had a couple with a very nice home here down the street from us, and they have a dog, and they leave the slider open to the backyard from the kitchen so the dog can wander in and out of the house all day. And I said, okay, let me tell you something. I said, what are you going to do if somebody comes into the house through the unlocked slider and is now standing in your kitchen? Well, he's inside my house. Can I shoot him? No, you can't. Because you left the door unlocked, and now there was no force or breakage to come into the house, and you have a case of simple trespass. You can't shoot a trespasser.
Oh.
Problem.
Remember that. You cannot shoot a trespasser. I had a lady down the road here who had a stable behind her house with horses in it, and she says, well, if I have my gun with me and I'm out in the stable and somebody walks into the stable, can't I shoot them? No, you can't. Why? Because you left the door open. Now they're guilty of simple trespass. If they just wandered in and they're standing there, they are not a threat to you yet. So you tell them, you're trespassing on my property, leave. If they won't leave after you've told them, that now becomes criminal trespass, but you still can't shoot them. You can call the police and say, hey, there's some nut job standing in my barn and the guy won't leave, come get him. But he has not presented an imminent threat to you of grave bodily harm. Now, if he advances towards you and he picks up a pitchfork, can you shoot him?
Yep.
Yeah.
Heck yeah. Because now you have an imminent threat of great bodily harm. Let me use what's called the Shark Tank analogy to tell you defense of property and the difference between defense of life. Okay? And you can't take a life to protect a dog, by the way. Dogs under the law are considered property. So you've got a shark tank. You're down there in Monterey, and you've got your little kid up on your shoulders, and he's throwing food into the shark tank, and the kid drops into the shark tank. As a parent, are you going to jump in and save the kid?
Probably.
In most cases.
Yeah.
In most cases.
We're taking a survey. Hold on.
Yeah.
The eyes have it.
Okay. Now, let's say you're there throwing the food in, and all of a sudden your watch comes off your arm and it drops in the shark tank. Are you really going to jump into the shark tank to save your watch?
No, probably not.
Get the guy with the pool scoop, and the guy scoops your watch out of the shark tank and gives it back to you. So under what conditions and what would it take for you to jump into this shark tank? Okay? We have a castle doctrine state in California, believe it or not. It's the literal fall walls of your home. But it also could be your RV. It could also be our tent at a campsite. So you can have a concealed loaded gun in your RV if you park the RV someplace in a campsite and you're living in it temporarily. Or you go to a campsite and you pitch your tent. You can have a loaded concealable firearm inside the tent because that is your temporary residence.
Hmm.
State of California. Okay.
Is that common in most of the country?
Generally.
Okay. Just curious.
Don't try that in Colorado, in Illinois, or New York or New Jersey. Because they're just bat nuts.
No kidding.
Okay.
Crazy
or nuts. Yes. So if you encounter somebody in your home, not wanted, they're not there just to steal your stuff. It's called an act of surprise. So we need to talk about the difference between a burglary versus a home invasion. In a burglary, like the movie Home Alone, the guys case the house for 3 or 4 days and assume that nobody is home, and burglars are never armed. They don't want to get a 5-year enhancement on their sentence if they're caught for a firearm violation. So burglars go into homes that are not inhabited and they're never armed. A home invasion is different. A home invasion is where people come into a home knowing that home is occupied. And when they do, 90% of the law is on your side. 90%. They're automatically guilty because the law in California has assumed legally they're not there to help you clean the house and wash the dishes. So you got to worry about that last 10%. Now, what's really funny is when a burglar goes into the house, they're in there for 90 seconds. And usually they're timing it. They're in there for 90 seconds. They go two places. The first place they go is the master bathroom medicine chest. They're looking for drugs. Oxycodone, whatever. The second place they go to, guess what that is, Aaron?
Closet. Oh, I'm sorry.
No.
Aaron?
No. It's Aaron's lingerie drawer.
Oh.
For some unknown reason, statistically,
no
women
pay dirt.
They hide an envelope with some emergency cash in it,
sure.
Passport, and it goes right in the lingerie drawer.
People keep their jewelry in there,
man,
too.
I'm going to have to go home and check that out.
It's incredible.
I know.
It's incredible.
I'm way smarter than you are, Bill. I've already been there and done that.
And this all comes from interviewing.
I hit it in your drawer.
Huh.
Yeah, home invasion. If they come in there, you've got to assume that they are going to be hell-bent on hurting somebody because they expect resistance. They are always armed because they expect resistance. Okay? That's a given. They are always armed. Okay? So that's why you have to, consider that something other than a simple burglary. But at least we know what they're stealing. Okay, moving right along quickly, let's talk about bear fear. Bear fear is insufficient justification for shooting somebody. Case in point, 85-year-old woman, she's standing inside her condo door, front door, homeless guy is on the porch. The guy smells bad, looks bad, probably is somewhat bad, won't leave the porch. The woman shoots through the door and hits the guy. Fortunately, the guy didn't die. She goes to court. The deputy DA says, why did you shoot through the door at this man who was not an imminent threat? And she then testifies, well, he really scared me the way he looked and talked.
Mm.
That's their fear. Okay? Imagine you're on a jury and you're listening to this person tell this story. And you're shaking your head going, no. She was behind the locked door. She didn't have to do that. She could have just called the police. So always assume that you're on a jury. Reasonable fear is required. So So you have a homeowner who is sitting there and relating the story about being home alone, let's say, and a guy breaks into the house, tries to break through the bedroom door, and she fired through the bedroom door to stop this threat. Is that reasonable?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Always pretend like you're on a jury, okay? So whatever the circumstances are, they have to be sufficient to excite the fears of a reasonable person. Let's get back to that last 10%. So you wind up in the middle of the night, you guy's trying to break through the bedroom door, you're on the phone with 911, you've warned him twice, he continues to beat and kick on the door, you fire three or four rounds through the door. This is all on tape. The police show up and they say, what happened? Trust me, we know what happened. But we got to ask the question anyway.
Sure.
So you don't open the bedroom door, look at the guy laying on the carpet wrecking your floor, and say, that was a hell of a shot, wasn't it? Look at that. No, you don't say that.
And no selfie?
Yeah, the body cam footage, and then they burn you in effigy. We, believe it or not, have to take another fast break.
Okay, the only thing that you say that should come out of your mouth is, I did what I did because I was in fear for my life.
Yeah, that's key.
That's the key. Now you've met that last 10%.
Very good. So real quick, before we exit here, when we come back, I want to know, if you have your safe room is your master bedroom and you have your flip locks and you've not knocked yourself unconscious with your door while replacing the screws, you got that all done, do you have that door shut and locked at night while you're sleeping, or do you wait till you hear noise, jump out of bed, and shut and lock the door? And we'll be right back with the answer. We are speaking with Peter Friedman, and you're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
Who is it?
When we catch a criminal, there's nothing we can do but play cops and robbers, cops and robbers.
Okay, so are we barricaded in the room at night, or are we hoping we hear them, we jump up, and then we lock the door?
I have the greatest answer for that.
Nice.
Number one, if you created a safe room, then you have to go into the safe room at night and lock the door. And then some people say, well, I have a dog. And the dog likes to come in and jump on the end of the bed for a while, sleep on the end of the bed during the night. Okay, put a dog door in the bedroom door.
Mm-hmm.
So you think locking the bedroom door at night is a good idea?
Absolutely. You've got to have at least a 60-second head start. And at 3 o'clock in the morning, trust me, 60 seconds is like an eternity.
Yeah.
In 60 seconds, if you practice whatever your plan happens to be that we talked about earlier, 60 seconds is plenty of time. 60 seconds is plenty of time, all right, to hear what you're hearing, get into your case, get the gun, make sure it's loaded, okay, and listen at that point. Verify what you think is going on. Don't come out of the safe room, okay, especially because you're going to get on the phone with the 911 dispatcher and you're telling them, hey, I'm in the safe room, I'm in the master bedroom, and I'm armed, and there's somebody in the house. Okay, at 60 seconds, believe me, is a long time. Gives you all the time in the world to play with your air horn, the flash, whatever it happens to be. You practice this, and believe me, you'll see how much time you have. Okay, it only takes a second and a half to cover 21 feet.
Mm-hmm.
So you will have plenty of time. Go to sleep at night with the door locked, with the flip lock. You've got a hardened door. You're buying time. And if you absolutely have to let the dog in and out, just go and put a dog door in your bedroom door. It's that simple. Nobody ever thinks of that.
Hmm.
Give you another funny scenario. This actually happened. It happened out in Antioch, out near where I live. 3 o'clock in the morning, a homeowner gets up because he hears somebody beating through the front door. Comes downstairs with his .357 revolver, comes around the corner of the hallway, and sitting in his living room just inside the front door is a guy in a wheelchair with a baseball bat. The homeowner shot him. The homeowner got 5 years for voluntary manslaughter. Didn't actually kill the guy. Couldn't cripple him anymore.
A guy with a
wheelchair. Imagine you're on the jury. And this homeowner is saying, well, guy came around, the guy beat his way through the front door, he's inside my house, I have the legal right to shoot him. No, you don't. Because to have a crime, you've got to have the elements of the crime. You have to have intent, you've got to have mobility, you know, the ability to actually complete the crime. How much, 25 feet away, was this guy an imminent threat to the homeowner? Now, I'll change the scenario. Guy comes down 3 o'clock in the morning, finds the guy sitting in his front room, and instead of a baseball bat, the guy's holding a firearm. Can you shoot him?
I think so at that point.
Yeah.
Hell yes, absolutely.
Yeah, because his time to get to you now is zero. He just pulls the trigger.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He has the intent, and now because he's holding a firearm, he has the ability to do great bodily harm to you, or worse. Now you can shoot him. You see the difference between the scenarios?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay, so you got to have intent, ability, and opportunity for a crime, the elements of the crime, to be complete. Now you add imminent jeopardy to that because the guy now has a firearm that is pointed towards you. There's no question. There's no question. And you don't, like in the movies, put the firearm down. No, you don't do that because as you're doing that, he's pulling the damn trigger.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, you're putting yours down.
And yeah. You can't get to yours quick enough.
Uh-uh.
Action beats reaction every single time. And deadly force, the use of deadly force ends, obviously, when there's no longer a threat. So the person that was threatening you has either given up or run away. Okay, they can no longer threaten you for one reason or another. Or the police arrive. When the police arrive, do not confront the police holding a firearm. Okay? The police will get into the house. You're going to use your glow stick. We get in the house. We come to the bedroom door. We see there's some guy ruining your carpet, assumed room temperature, and we know that you're in there. We know you've got a firearm because there's holes in the door. Okay? This is a contractor's dream. So we're going to tell you, turn on the white light, put the gun down on the bed or on the floor, and come out of the room with your hands in plain sight. Doesn't mean over your head. It just means we want to make sure that you're not holding the firearm. I had one case down in L.A. back in 67 where shots fired. We got up there. We told the old lady behind the bedroom door exactly what I just told you. She said, okay, no problem. Opens the door, she's got the gun in her hand.
Oh, dear.
Because when you go into shock and you panic, your heart rate goes over like 150, your blood pressure goes over 200, and you're panicked. That's like looking at the cell phone, trying to find the 911 key. Very hard to do.
Yeah.
So these are just things that you kind of got to remember. Transporting firearms, once again, I want to go through that real quick. It has to be unloaded in a locked container. Now, one other thing I'm going to tell you, and I'm not going to give you legal advice, but I'm merely going to direct you to the Penal Code, Section 25600. Only because I've encountered this several times now in the last couple of months. Ex-wife, girlfriend gets a restraining order against the lunatic ex-boyfriend, ex-husband, gets a restraining order. They can't qualify for a CCW. But on the other hand, in the state of California, Penal Code 25600 grants a certain defense against carrying a concealed firearm under 25400 to somebody who has an active restraining order.
Hmm.
Most people don't know that.
So if you have an active restraining order against somebody else, you have the right to conceal carry?
I didn't say that. I said that 25600 is an affirmative defense against violating the concealed carry law.
Okay.
So you're in front of a jury. You're on the jury, and here's this girl, and she's got this lunatic ex-boyfriend who's been stalking her, who has done a number of things. He's keyed her car. He's broken into the house. Police have been called three or four times. She's got a restraining order. And the next guy that the next time this guy does this, okay, she's outside the house. She's getting into her car. And she pulls the gun out of her purse and she shoots this guy in self-defense. The affirmative defense for her having the gun in the purse is the fact that she has an active restraining order against somebody having committed violent offenses. Read it carefully, talk to an attorney, talk to the DA, and they will tell you exactly what I just told you because that's what they've told me. That's what the law says. It's a defense against a violation of carrying a loaded concealed firearm without a permit.
It's not a permit.
It's a defense.
It's a defense, yeah.
Okay.
It's a defense, okay?
And so it'll cost you. So you might as well just get the permit.
Well, I would strongly recommend, because you're up there in Shasta County, that's a shall-issue county. Most of your northern counties are shall-issue instead of may-issue. And, you know, if you can pass the firearm qualification, do it.
Mm-hmm.
You can find the application. It's the standard California DOJ CCW application. It's on my website. If you go to the left-hand side under forms, I believe the second item is the California DOJ application for a CCW.
Nice.
And you can find people up there in your county who teach this.
And for all those people who think you can just go apply for a concealed weapons permit and then run around and carry a gun, not that easy. And there's a lot of training that does go with that. Mr. Friedman, we have hit the end of the road here. Can you believe it?
I've got two more hours. Though.
I know. We're definitely talking to you some more. So stay tuned.
I look forward to it.
Watch your email. We are looking forward to it, too. We're all running to the hardware store now.
You got it.
You've been listening to We the People. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us.